Welcome to Wing Chun Talk. Wing Chun Talk podcast is dedicated to talking all things Wing Chun. Your host, Sean Benson, has the pleasure of sitting down with other Wing Chun practitioners from around the world. If you are interested in Wing Chun or want to connect with other Wing Chun practitioners, then this podcast is for you. Sit back and enjoy Wing Chun Talk.
All right, welcome everyone. Sean Benson here, coming in live to Wing Chun Talk. I have a Sifu from the UK dropping in today with us to share some information and get to know him a little bit better. Lewis Arnold, welcome. Thanks for being here.
No, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
I'm glad you're here, and it looks sunny where you're at, so a little jealous. I'm in the basement here.
Yeah, we don't get it all the time. It's only going to last for a few days and then it'll be rain. So don't be too jealous. I'm sure you live in a very nice part of the world.
It's sunny today. Everything's set up down here. So welcome. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate you spending some time with me.
No, thank you.
So to kind of get started, I just wanted to jump right in really and kind of get how you got into Wing Chun. We chatted previously and we talked for half an hour and I could have talked way longer with you.
You're good. Of course.
Yeah.
If you catch me on the subject of Wing Chun, I could talk all day. So, and actually I think a lot of the time that's what all my students sometimes say to me, like, you know, okay, that's enough. That's enough information.
Right.
How I got into Wing Chun? Well, I mean, it started, when I was a teenager, a family friend of mine, he used to teach Wing Chun. Because of that, I sort of was drawn towards it, but he didn't teach children. So I was probably only 13 at the time. And I think his rule was he wouldn't teach you like anyone under 16. So he said, come back to me in a few years. And of course, you know, life gets in the way. You start, you got friends and stuff like that, and you're sort of interested in going out and meeting girls and stuff like that. So I think I didn't go back to him until I was about 18. And by that point, he had actually took over to just teaching special forces.
Oh, wow.
So he didn't want any civilians. He was only teaching the British special forces at the time. So that kind of left me in a hole. I'd done boxing and other bits going through my childhood and stuff like that. But I was kind of looking for that. Never really found it. Couldn't find anyone around locally. And then I think at some point I was working my job, and I think I just sort of like, you know, realized there was a certain stress level to what I was doing, and I wanted a bit of a vent. And so I typed into Google one day and realized that one of his students was then teaching. So I got into it like that, and I stayed with him for quite a few years. And that was under the they were under the Samuel Kwok Association. So they were under that sort of lineage: Ip Chung, Ip Ching, Sam Kwok. So I trained under that lineage for quite a few years, got up to a black sash, and then I sort of ended up, as you do, you start sort of like looking at other things, and especially with YouTube these days, you can see so much information and different lineages and different sifus. And one of my sihing at the time, he directed me towards Gary, Sifu Gary Lam, and I borrowed his DVD that he lent me, and I watched it. I think I didn't give it back to him for 6 months. You know, I just kept watching it over and over and over again. And in the end, I sort of went down that route. So that's how I ended up getting into Wing Chun. The lineage change was due to other sort of reasons. That was mainly to do with the information that Sifu Gary was giving. He really did sort of like make it logical. So that was predominantly the thing for me was when he explained something to you, you just think, oh, of course, yeah, that makes sense. You know, so it makes it understandable and logical, rather than there being sort of too much mysticalness about stuff. Sifu Gary's not like that. He's very much, it has to work on the bare bones. And if it doesn't, then, you know, we got to strip it back and find out why. And I like that approach. You know, he has a fighter's approach to Wing Chun, because, you know, that's kind of like, so that's what drew me towards that lineage in the end, was that you know, someone that's done it and someone that's used it. So, but Wing Chun for me was mainly an escape rather than, you know, rather than anything else. It was kind of like just one of those things. I enjoyed the art form. I realized that to be a boxer, you had to be in great physical shape, and a lot of your sort of skill or how good you are depends on your physique and how much you train. And I knew that I couldn't commit to sort of doing a 6 mile run every single day and keeping that kind of thing. So, I enjoy boxing, but Wing Chun was my passion, because there's more art to it, in my opinion. So for me, that's what drew me towards that. And but, you know, people start for different reasons. Some people is for self-defense. Other people, you know, that they just want to socialize and meet people. So, and yeah. I like that you get a real broad spectrum of people who sort of join it, and for different reasons. And that's one of the main things I ask my students all the time when they first start. So, you know, what do you want to get from it? What are you looking to gain? And it's interesting, because you predominantly most people go, oh, self-defense. But you strip that back after a while and say, well, you know, you now know how to defend yourself. Why are you still learning it? Why are you still pushing yourself? And then they sort of say, oh, well, okay, yeah, I like the art form, or I want to perfect this, or I want to. So, you know, people like that sort of thing. And I enjoy it.
Nice. So do you keep asking kind of as they level up? Like, I mean, what keeps you?
Yeah, it's one of my go-to questions. And I ask the class, even guys that have been doing it longer than me. I mean, actually, a lot of my old Siheng come across when I come back from Sifu Gary's the first time. Obviously, you know, one of them I used to go jogging with on a regular basis, and he sort of phoned me up a couple of days after I got back and said, oh, you want to go out on a jog? I said, yeah, no way. It's a little bit overweight being in America and eating these huge portions. In the UK, we don't get that.
I thought you'd be super fit after going like full-time training
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, it's the last couple of days in America, and I you know, ever since I turned 30 a few years back, I look at a burger now and I seem to put on weight. So it's like it's one of those things. And it is one of those questions. But yeah, he met up with me, and we you know, he obviously wanted to touch hands, and that was sort of like what he wanted to do. So we done that, and he was amazed with what I had learned. And so then that was it. He sort of like one phones the other one, and then I get a couple of phone calls saying, oh, do you want to meet up? So in the end, I ended up sort of meeting up with all the Siheng and training with them, and they just wanted to learn something new, you know, so they come across with me, and now they're my students. And I've got quite a few of my old Siheng from my old club are now my students. So they've been doing it longer than me. But, you know, that's the thing with what we learn with Sifu Gary and the Gary Lam system, is he has a system, and the system is very, very good. It's important for me to ask the students at different stages, what are you doing it for? Because, you know, you want to be able to help a student to get out of something what he wants to get out. You know, so if he or she wants to get something out of it, what are they wanting to get out of it? If they just want to get a socialization, then that's fine, you know, and we accommodate that. But if they really want to get the high level skill, then we work them a little bit more, and I push them a little bit further. And we, you know, it's not sometimes what they're doing, you know, we just push that a little bit further. Oh, it's not good enough, you know, and make them really go to work on site. So, I mean, this is something that Gary done to me. You know, you'd be on the dummy, and he'd just watch it, and he's like, keep going. And you'd sort of spend the whole day just working the dummy, you know, and over there training starts at, we start about 9 a.m., finish about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then you come, or sometimes later, sometimes a little bit earlier, and then you'd come back to it about 5 p.m. and you train till 9 p.m. So, and he'd just keep you on the dummy the whole time, you know. It's like And by the end of that day or two, couple of days like that, you look at the dummy and think, I don't want to touch that thing again for the next, 3-4 months. You just.
Yeah.
But that's the only way to get skill, you know, is to really work on science nonstop until you crack it. So, but yeah, so in terms of students, I mean, it's a fine line. You have to know which ones you can push and which ones you can't push. Some just don't like it, and then they leave if you push too hard, and others really want that. So,
Totally. Like, I mean, but do you think you kind of hurt feelings, or is it just they have other like reasons for being there, and they just don't, or they don't want to be corrected? Like, I mean,
Some people hate being corrected. Some people hate. I mean, to be honest with you, I like it. For me, it's one of those things, and that's why I go back to LA a lot, because. While I'm being corrected, I know that I've still got stuff I'm working on. So this is why with the titles of Sifu and stuff like that, I'm still a student first and foremost, you know. So for me, I'm still training. And I always will be, you know, that's the thing. For me, there's not a finish line. You know, and I think if people can keep that idea, you can always make something better. So even if you know, most people, they're like, oh yeah, I know the dummy form. Just go work on it, keep working on it, because you might know it, but do you really, you know, can you say 100% that everything's perfect? And if you can't, then you've still got something you can improve on. And if you can say 100% perfect, I don't believe you, you know, because it's not true. And to me, that's what, you know, it's like anything. I think when I spoke to you before, I sort of told you, the comparisons we like to sort of make, and it's to do like, even when you look at a tradesman, you know, you can have a tradesman that knows how to do something and he's all right at it, and then you can get a guy that's you know, that's amazing at something. So you know, this is what we're sort of, you know, you want that higher, like, you know, I don't want to use the term mastery because I think it's very, you know, but that's the goal. The goal is mastery. Whether it's achievable or not is something totally different, but that is the goal, is to, so, but not all students want that. So that's what I mean. We have to work out who wants that and who doesn't want that.
Right. And
that's what we're looking for. In the Gary Lamb lineage, we talk about upgrade a lot. So we always talk about upgrading. And the goal is to upgrade your skill.
Okay. Gotcha.
So that's the goal.
Right. Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I was doing just like a little video series on how to improve at most anything. And I said the same thing. Like, I did something. I Googled something, how to do something, watched a video, figured out how to do it. But I can't even remember what I videoed and what the task was. So it's just like, I can do it, but am I a master? Am I really good at it? Could I do it repetitively over and over well? Probably not, right? So I'd have to go back, relearn it, and then.
Well, yeah, it's like anything. I think they say, like, yeah, I know the numbers contested a little bit, but I think they say 10,000 times to mastery or something like that. So, you know, if you take a basic technique like a Paxow, and then you do that, 10,000 times, that's a lot of times, you know, to try and get that number. And I think they say it takes roughly 10 years. Now, I'm not saying you can be a master in 10 years, but I mean, to get really good at something is that sort of 10-year period. And with diligent work, of course. So for me, you know, in the Gary Lamb system, for instance, when I first went over to do the level one with Sifu Gary, I looked up at the board and there was only sort of 16 techniques on the level one on his syllabus. And I was like, well, that's not going to take very long, you know, because from the lineage that I was in before, we'd have like an A4 sheet for each grading. There was sort of like, you know, a massive amount to learn on there. And then when I realized, actually, just with this one sheet, there was years of learning in that alone, you know, and it's the attention to detail is more important than it's that same thing, is quality over quantity. So it's like Gary, you know, Sifu Gary will say, a lot of the time he will say, you know, it's not just about knowing every technique, you have to get good at it. So I think, like, even when you learn his system, he'll say, oh, you know it now, but it doesn't mean you're good, you know. Wow. Now you have to put the work in, and you have to learn it and really get good at it. So just because you know a technique doesn't mean you're good at it. You get it quite a lot with students. They learn a drill and then they go, okay, what's next? And you're like, well, I'll tell you what's next when you're ready to learn what's next. And that's not me being arrogant. That's because I want their skill to develop. And so for me and my students, I always push them that little bit further in terms of I want to see that they've got everything out of a drill before we teach them the next drill. And Gary Lamb's system is kind of taught in that way. So it's taught like you'll learn this and you'll stay on that drill until you're ready for the next one. And we can see that you've got the understanding of it and you can do it. And, you know, so some people don't stick that out. I mean, and some people, they don't enjoy that. They want to learn everything real quick. No. Modern day society, that's what we're like. You know, we want everything now and we're impatient for information. But unfortunately, anything that's worth or anything that's skillful, highly skillful, takes time. And
I totally agree.
But, you know, I mean,
let's circle back a little bit, because, I mean, you've spent a long period in a previous lineage, but then you went out to LA and that was compressed, correct? Like, I mean,
yeah. So I only, in the previous lineage, I only went, the guy ran 3 classes a week, 2-hour sessions. And I would meet up with a couple of the Seeing outside of class. So we do sort of 6 to 8 training hours a week tops.
Yeah.
And then, the baptism of fire, as it was, at Gary Lamb's backyard. Gary Lamb's backyard. That was, that was an experience because I'd never pushed my body that hard before. Just the acclimatization, you know, you get out there, it's hot. And the training, you know, I mean, they train, like I told you, the hours like 9 a.m. till sort of like 2 o'clock. Sometimes it finishes midday. Sometimes it pushes a little bit further. Depends on the sort of dynamic in the yard, who's there, who's sort of thing. So, you know, we push hard and train hard. And then you train in the evening, of course. And you're really just living and breathing Wing Chun. And that is that's a brilliant experience. Yeah, and I've done that several times. I mean, I think I've got another visit planned in January. Touch wood that all this situation with the coronavirus disappears and we're allowed to travel. So I've got another 6-week block booked in then. So I'm heading back out to LA for 6 weeks training.
Nice. Is that typically the time frame that you go for? Is 6 weeks or what?
I mean, some guys actually, it's amazing because the first time I went out there, and it's a real mix of guys that turn up, and you know, and ladies as well. But the guys that were staying in the backyard, because we stay at Gary's house. So I was living with Gary for the first time. I think I went out there for 5 weeks. And that was a push because I'd never been at home. You know, I've got a wife and 2 children. I've never been away for that long.
For sure,
And that was quite a push. So I think the next time I went back, I went for a month. And then I went for the long trips. Then I went for 2 6-week blocks. So I sort of 6 weeks, come home for a couple of weeks, then went back for 6 weeks.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was a hard one, that one, because you sort of like you got home and then you thought, oh, I'm going back out there in a couple of weeks. So it was like, oh wow, this is
what made you go back kind of back to back there? Like, was it just timing or just?
Well,
like,
I booked a flight and I booked a trip, and then I think I kind of like spoke to Sifu and I said, look, I'm coming out for 6 weeks. And he said, you should try coming for longer. And I went, well, I don't think I can push that. And then I think he planted that seed in my head. And the next thing is all of a sudden I booked another 6-week block. And then I was like crept into the lounge and sort of said to my wife, listen, I might have done something. And she just went, what? I think, you know, from
she must really love you. That's awesome.
Well, really doesn't like me being at home, one or the other. I don't know.
Yeah, one or the other, right?
But I mean, I'm not in the house quite a lot anyway, because I'm always out teaching and training. So actually with the lockdown, this is the most I've ever been at home, really. I mean, And, you know, so it, for me, the thing of going to LA was really, I mean, it was to try and get that consolidated time in. So I originally I only wanted a Wing Chun holiday. My old Si Hing in the previous lineage, they had all been out to Hong Kong, and unfortunately I couldn't go on that trip. And so that was in the old lineage, the old school that I was in. And they all went out and they come back and they were all so excited and buzzing. They were sort of like, oh, this it was amazing. They'd done this and they'd been to see all these different guys and train with loads of different sifus. And I was like, oh, right. Jealous a little bit, you know, but I was sort of like, oh, no, I really want to do that. But the thought of going to Hong Kong on my own, you know, not speaking the language and stuff like that. And I thought, well, and I looked at the money, and to be honest, it was nearly the same money to go to Gary for a month as it was to go to Hong Kong for a couple of weeks and live and train and stay there. Right. So for me, the decision was quite a clear cut one. I had always wanted to go see Sifu Gary and train with him. So I took that leap and I went. And like I say, I mean, he was very humble, lovely guy, picked me up from the airport, you know. Wow. Quite unassuming. And, you know, going back to the thing of skill, when we were talking about skill, the one thing that amazed me was how easy he makes it look. And when we talk about skill and like even what we talk about, like a tradesman, a good tradesman makes something look so easy, and you try doing it and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can't do that.
Fumbling this and dropping that.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it's like with him. You just look at him and he's going, oh, it's easy. Just do this, do that. And then you're going, oh, what? You know, and it's all clunky and you can't get those movements. And so, you know, but he is such a lovely, kind guy. And he's very generous with the information as well. So you get a lot of info on forms and you know, just general skill and little tips and hints and, you know, but he makes you work hard. I mean, I've seen guys try to sit down before, and he you know, don't do that. Don't do that. That's not good. You know, he's like, oh, you're lazy. You've come all this way. Get up, work, keep going. So he drives you. He really does drive you. But for me, the main thing that kept me going back was, you know, it's the skill that you see. Not just in him, it's the skill you see in all the high level students there. So for me, it kind of like made that, it sold itself to me in the way. So when you look and you see, well, actually, like, you know, this guy's level two and this guy's level three and this guy's level two and this guy's level three. And, you know, and there was a lot of them and they were all good. And I thought, you know, the system works. He's got something here that really works. So, you know, and I had been to travel to see other schools in the UK, and obviously it would have been easier just to go to another school in the UK to keep training. But but of course, for me, it was like, well, you know, go as close to the water source as you can get. And so that's what led me to Gary anyway. So
kind of to not sidetrack here a little bit, but like when you were looking at going to train full, well, the Sifu Gary Lam school club and do some full-time training. Did you have a thought that you would take this forward and come back? Like you're going to go through his system then?
No, not at all. So for me, originally it was a Wing Chun holiday. I think for my previous teacher, I had, my previous Sifu, I had helped teach his classes for him because I was one of the senior students. And, so when he went away on holiday or if he had anything important to do, I would take the classes and I would teach. So sometimes he'd leave me for a couple of weeks and I'd be teaching all his classes. And but teaching had never really crossed my mind in that way. And it was only something that I think, you know, when I was at Sifu Gary's and I was about to, I was a couple of days away from leaving. And he sort of said, oh, what are you going to do now then when you go home? And I said, well, I don't know. I haven't really got any training partners. And he said, well, start teaching then. Open your own school and start teaching. And he kind of like, well, okay, that's not a bad idea. I'm sure I've got a few friends that I can get outside. And that's kind of like the birth of it. So that was where it come from. And then we I ended up going back. So I think I'd done my level one in my first trip. And then I spent just a year solidly just working on that with a couple of guys. And I was teaching at the same time, but I was spending a lot of time with, I'm very lucky, my brother does Wing Chun as well. And so he's one of those annoying people that picks things up very quickly.
I know those people.
I'd show him a technique and he'd be like instantly able to do it. And I'm going, hold on, wait a second. That took me like, you know, a month to learn that. So he's a very good training partner. So we spend a lot of time training and going through different sort of drills. So we spent that year doing that. And then I went back and done my level two. And now I'm into my level three and starting looking at the level four syllabus as well. So, so I kind of like hook, line and sinker straight into it, really. Nice. But, yeah, there was never an intention to teach. It just kind of fell into it.
Okay.
And you know, the thing is, like a lot of stuff, Gary will say, you never really learn. And actually, I'll say my other teacher said this as well. You don't learn until you teach, really. You don't really start learning until you teach, because having to teach makes you reiterate in your own mind. You're sort of like, you know, and they might ask a question that you've not even thought of. So it makes your knowledge and your understanding go deeper, because I'm sure you've had the same thing when your Sifu would have said to you, oh, can you show him this drill? And he'd ask you a question and you go, wait, I don't know, I never thought of that. And then you'd have to go back to the Sifu and ask. So it makes you really understand the drill or the technique that you're talking about. And so teaching is, sorry, that light is, it makes you really understand. So I'm glad it pushed me down that road, because it's totally changed my perspective on Wing Chun, and having to adapt it for different body types as well. So it really makes you think about stuff, because, you know, you get a small framed lady or a small framed guy, and you know, if you put them up against someone who's big, a lot of the time, you know, techniques just won't work for those people. And so you have to look at it and think, well, why is it not working, and adapt it for them, and maybe they need a little bit of something put in there. So that's an important part to learn yourself, because it helps you identify what could be wrong with you against someone else or something like that. So you know, for me, if you don't learn to teach, or if you don't teach or share the knowledge, you won't learn it, you know, you won't really learn it. So you have to, I think everyone has to do that. They have to be given with the knowledge and answer questions for people. And if you don't know, you have to admit that to yourself and think, well, I don't know that. And a couple of times I'll get a student who asks me a question and I'm like thinking, I don't really know the answer to that. And I end up, you know, I'll email Gary and I'll record a little video and I'll send it to him saying, you know, he's asked me this and I don't really understand. So for me, it's just about knowledge, you know, just gaining more and more knowledge and trying to apply that into what I'm teaching and what I'm doing. So it's important. But anyone that, you know, pretends to be all knowing is not, you know, it's not
troublesome there, isn't it? Yeah. Someone, but I mean, it seems like, it seems like you got a good Sifu in Sifu, you know, Gary Lam there. Like,
yeah,
he seems to be open and.
Well, yeah,
because like
that's all you need, really, is someone's willing to show you the right way and to point you in the right direction. So,
is that how you run your club? I mean, you're under his banner, I guess, right? Like you're an affiliate or how do you?
When you reach a level three, you're allowed to open your own school with his permission. But we don't pay any affiliation fees or nothing like that. You know, there's nothing like that. We just, you know, as long as you're teaching his syllabus,
yeah,
or his system, and you can add to the system as well. So, you know, some of the guys, they've added their own, sort of stuff in, experience and bits that they've added in over the years. For me, I teach mine exactly the same way as it's taught to me. So I don't alter anything, because for me, I just think, like, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing. So I just want to teach it exactly the same way. And maybe in, you know, a few years or so, I may end up adding a few bits in, but for me, I haven't seen anything that's missing. So yeah. I don't see the need to do that, but yeah, apart from that, we, you know, we, I think one of the requirements is that you go back on a regular basis and just make sure you're keeping your skill level up.
Totally makes sense. I do want to kind of touch on how you run. So, because like I've seen some of his YouTube videos, I've seen the backyard. I mean, you've been there, you've done it. But he has a whiteboard. I mean, do you implement theory into your
massively yeah. Okay. The theory behind it learning and you can obviously buy Gary's DVDs. They're available, Crane's Production and stuff like that, so you can get them from there, and they actually a lot of that's on there. So even the higher level stuff, he talks about it and explains it, because knowledge is half of what you're doing. You know, if you don't know what you're doing, it's very difficult to, you don't know why you're doing something, or you don't know how you're doing something. It's very difficult to make sure you're doing it right. You know, so the knowledge is a massive part of it. So, you know, when we talk about skill is obviously the thing of being able to use it and do it. And that just comes through drilling. But to know, so we talk about in Gary's system, he talk about three center lines. And, you know, some people, one center line, I think in the practical Wing Chun, those guys have five center lines they talk about. Okay. So, you know, Gary's theory is very, very straightforward, and it's very logical. So, that's a main part of our sort of teaching, is to use the theory based side of stuff as well to explain to the students what they should be doing, why they're doing it. Without going into too much detail, Gary will talk about using angles and positioning, and we actually look at the angles. You know, we draw them out and we show people, look, you know, first movement, step this angle, the second movement here, third angle here, and it's really just a basis to for them to understand. A bit of fighting strategy. And this is something that this in the Gary Lamb system is fighting strategy, fighting philosophy. So he talk a lot about the distance between you and the opponent, which I feel is lacking in a lot of lineages. They go straight to Chisao, and they don't really know how to bridge that gap between the two. They never work on that. And so what happens is you see these videos where you get a Wing Chun guy against the boxer, and because he's never really worked on bridging that gap, he's stuck out at that distance, and he's at the boxer's mercy because the boxer works that distance, kickboxer works that distance. So the theory side of things is a very, very important part of it, is learning, what dangers are present at what time. You know, so with a kickboxer or a taekwondo guy, I don't want to be at kicking range because he's happy at that range and I'm not. But you have to know how to get in. And this is one of the things that Gary, Sifu Gary will talk about, is he will talk about a price that you have to pay to get in someone's range. And that when you're not so skilled, that could be a broken jaw, you know. But as you get better, there might only be a split lip. But you know, he's quite realistic and he'll tell you the truth. If you're going to fight, you're going to get hit. That's why I don't like all this mystical sort of side of stuff you get sometimes, where they pretend that, you get some lineages out there where they pretend that, you know, they're going to be able to penetrate opponents' defenses and they're not going to get a mark on them. It doesn't have, that only works if you're fighting someone that has no fighting skill at all. If you're fighting someone that is a fighter as well, you're going to get hit. So it's like, you know, it's like Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. They're both, they were both two of the top boxers. They still took punches. So right. You've got to be a realist about what is going to happen. So that's a lot to do with what we study. Obviously just to do with fighting philosophy and strategy and skill in terms of in terms of actual the properties of fighting. Okay. So you know what someone's energy is, how they're driving forwards. So I see a lot of stuff where you see a demonstration and the guy just steps forwards with a punch and it's left out and it's just a basic one.
It's hanging there. It's hanging there. Let me play with that punch.
Yeah, and you see the guy in here do 20 strikes and you're like, well, what about the other hand?
Right.
And the answer for a lot of guys is always the same thing. It will be, oh, yeah, but this happens so fast. And you just look and think, so is his other punch. You know, that's going to happen the instant. It's going to be a ba-bang. Like, you know, so what you have to look at is a realistic thing was that the second punch is already coming. So as the first punch is hitting, the second punch is already hitting. So, you know, one of the biggest realizations for me was that we train in a more realistic way, that we have to deal with multiple punches by the opponent, and you get a lot of randomized stuff as well, you know. So not with beginners, we keep it nice, straight, simple, basics. But as you progress, you're looking for them to throw in a bit more randomized stuff. You know, you want to see some hooks coming off of the opponent and stuff like that, and some more unorthodox stuff. But distance control is one of those things that we work on a lot as well. So, you know, in Gary's lineage or Sifu Gary's lineage, we talk about first distance, second distance, and closing distance. And that's basically, you're really looking at, you know, where on the arm are you intercepting the opponent? If I'm intercepting you on the wrist, I can't step straight in and punch you because I haven't penetrated your defense deep enough to get in there and hit. So you have to work your way to the opponent. You can't just go from right out on the limit of your range and go straight into the closing range. And if you can, it's because you're so much better than the opponent. So right. These are sort of things you have to play with, and you have to start to, you know, it's great. You learn the basics, you learn the drills, and then you've got to start to sort of dissect what you're doing and think, okay, how would this work if this guy's stepping in like this? How would this work if this guy's stepping backwards a bit? Because you've got to make that range up. You know, I see a lot of stuff where you see them hitting and they're at a range where, you know, they would be touching the opponent. That's not economy of motion, because we don't just want to pepper the opponent. We want to make sure that those punches count for something. So that again is something that you know, people in our lineage we work on is the making sure that when you hit, you're delivering something. And, you know, Gary will talk about that in a few of his DVDs. You'll hear him say, you know, about people, and they hit the guy 10 times and then the guy gets up and he goes, oh, like, you know, go up and get over there, hit the wall back. You know, you've got to work on it, because obviously if you hit the guy 10 times and he's getting up, there's a problem with your technique. So, so he sort of, and that's what I mean by a fighter. He wants to see that real skill, and he wants to know that you can work it. And if you can't, then, you know, he highlights you. He's got that sort of ability, and I'm trying to develop it slowly, to be able to look at someone and go, you know, watch what they do and then go, right, you need to work on that. You know, he's got that straight away. He'll pull you up on your bad points within a few seconds, and he'll send you off to work on them with some drills. And so for me, you know, the theory and the practical together are just as important. If you've only got practical and you've got no theory, it only works while it's work in that environment. It only works in that training environment. But if you have a theory behind it, you know what's happening when it goes wrong. So you know how to fix it. You know how to get back on track. So that's the basis for the theory anyway.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So in your club, so we already talked about, you do the whiteboard theory, however you do it, if you have a certain time or you just break it down maybe during a class just to help explain.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. Sometimes it just depends on if they ask a question. If I see something going on that I don't like, or, you know, it's normally something you've told them 100 times before. And, you know, as a CFU, I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to keep telling them until they get it. You know, so that's how we sort of work it. I don't, for instance, say, right, okay, we're going to do an hour of theory. I don't set it up like that, because it's not what the students want.
For sure.
But you'll get some students that will naturally gravitate towards you to ask questions, and you'll get others that are just happy to get on with the drills and they just want to work. So, I don't make them all come over. I don't. So, okay, I'm going to explain something, come over here. Some of them will just get on while I'm talking and I'm over at the whiteboard, and others will come over and gravitate towards listening to me. So it's it's that happy medium. I don't say no, stop what you're doing, come here. I let them carry on.
A full hold stop, right? A full stop. Like, let me explain something. And what about the fighting strategy? Like, how do you apply that in your club where it's controlled? Are you chi-sowing or is it?
So predominantly what we the way that we work in the Gary Lamb system is we don't spar straight away. We will later on, but we don't spar straight away. The reason being is because it's like watching someone box for the first time. They can learn all the jab, cross, hook, uppercut, you know, four basic techniques. They learn against the punch bag, they start learning combinations. And then if they haven't done enough of it and they get put in the ring and they're not nurtured into it, what happens is they get punched in the face and it all goes out the window and their big swinging arms come back and everything like that. And the breathing's all gone, structure's gone, everything that you've worked on has gone out the window. So that's somewhat detrimental. I do think actually being punched in the face is quite, I don't want to say good. It teaches you something.
It's learning opportunity.
You know, you want that in certain ways to learn how to deal with that adrenaline, to learn how to keep yourself calm. Right. Because, of course, the first time, you ever get punched in the nose, your eyes start watering, your breathing goes out the window. And your body just goes into that sort of fight or flight sort of response and all that kind of sort of stuff. So, you need to learn to deal with that. And sparring is definitely a good method for dealing with that. However, to start with, what we try to do is keep them predominantly based on the drills. And then we just sort of like up the ante a little bit, progress the drills. Maybe, for instance, like if I'm doing something with a Paxow, at first I'll keep the Paxow nice and reasonably controlled speed. And then I'll just open up on them a little bit and give them a little bit of a faster thing just to put them under pressure, make sure I'm getting through, I'm tapping them a little bit, not hard, but just enough. And you'll see them slowly develop that speed of their response. I'm not talking about speed in the terms of like them beating me to something. I mean in the way how quick their reaction becomes. Mm-hmm. And you're looking for that defensive reaction to become quicker. And they're using the actual technique. So, for instance, they're using Kwon Sao, or they're using they're using Tan Da or something. So you're looking for those responses to start coming out. Naturally, and then we take it through into Chi Sao, and we then develop that. And I want to see those hands start to come out. So you actually want to see some development of some actual technique. Some stuff I watch, and they go a bit too fast, and then it just looks like really poor boxing because they're not doing boxing and they're not doing Wing Chun. They're kind of like just trying to do an amalgamation of both.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we don't want to see that. What we want to see is we want to see those hands come out. So I'd rather you went slower in a free Chi Sao and actually were helping each other more and developed and seeing like I say, Kwon Sao, Tan Da, Gan.
Double hand, right? Like,
And see the cooperation between the hands. So one hand's doing one thing, one hand's doing the other. You know, you want to see those things. I want to see the structure develop. And as that does, then, naturally you'll get a progression. So, for instance, like, if me and you were training together, as we keep going, you're going to push me that little bit further and that little bit further and that little bit further. And I'm going to do the same for you. So you'll get two guys that have been training together for years and they'll just be going all out on each other in the end. And it ends up going from Chi Sao. And then we sort of go, sometimes we put the head guards on and we put the gloves on.
Okay.
And I'll let them open up on each other a little bit. But I'll try whenever I start to see it going sloppy, I'll end it and say, look, stop, cool off 2 seconds, go back to it. But try and use those techniques. Make sure you're using the techniques, because otherwise you're just counterproductive to what you're doing, And then obviously as they get into higher levels, a lot of my students aren't really there at the moment. We're still working on the stuff, but we in the Gary Lamb system, we introduced kicking in the level two. Okay. So the reason being is very logical, actually, because I was a bit perplexed by it. I went over there. I said, oh, we don't do kicking then. He said, no, he's not until level two. And I thought, oh, that's a bit strange. And he said, well, the thing is, he said, if you're not stable on two legs, why would you take a leg off the floor? And straight away, I thought, okay, that makes perfect sense. If you're not fully structured and balanced on both legs, you take a leg off the floor, you've just taken 50% of your balance away straight away. You've just taken 50% of your stability away. So it was just logical straight away the moment he said it. And then when I come back, I had the same question off of my students. They were like, oh, do we not do kicking? I was like, yeah, we do, but not until level two. And you see the disappointment in their faces. But actually, as they've, you know, I've got a few students that are at the end of level one now, and they are they're on that fully understand that reasoning now. They're sort of like, oh yeah, I totally understand, and their structure's developed now, it's strong, so they're sort of getting to that stage where they could be introduced towards kicking you know, soon. And so, you know, for us, that's the way the system's set. And that, you know, Gary's logic is you know, Sifu Lam's logic is very, very good. And you just look and think, how long did he spend figuring this system out and setting it out in this order? Because it's ordered as well. You know, it gives you the right thing at the right time.
Wow.
And, you know, I can't speak highly enough of the system, because it's enabled me to develop the skill that I have developed. And by all means, I'm nowhere, you know, I'm not there yet. But I can see the path, I can see the road, and I can see how to get there. And the drills and the system enable you to do that. So it really, for me, it was a massive revelation. But yeah, so that's kind of like the way that we operate in terms of sparring. I know other schools like to get straight in there very quickly. And each have their own logic for it.
And then others don't do it at all. Like, I mean, the club I'm at, we don't spar, we don't gloves. Like,
there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, at the end of the day, as long as you're doing the chi sao, you're developing that reflex. So, like I say, over in Gary's, we very rarely, you don't really see much sparring going on. A lot of it is concentrating on the chi sao. So,
I mean, I shouldn't say that. I think years ago, the club had it part of the curriculum. But I think it's kind of been slowly phased out, whether it's liability, I'm not exactly sure, but, or just the type of club that, you know, is run right now. So yeah.
Like anything, a lot of the time it has to do with the Sifu's current sort of abilities as well. You know, I mean, in the previous lineage I was in, when I first started, we'd done a lot of kicking, and then, the teacher, he broke his ankle. And ever since that, afterwards, the kicking slowly got phased out because he wasn't able to do it as much. So his focus wasn't, he didn't have purpose, but it just wasn't focused on that. He focused more on the hand technique then. You know, he wasn't going to do that. And I think that's just natural. So sometimes that happens for that reason.
Totally.
Injury.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, another one or two questions. I don't want to keep you. I could talk to you all day, but...
No. I'm not bothered. Don't worry. You get me on one thing. I said I could keep talking all day, so...
Levels. Like, I haven't dug deep. I think I mentioned to you previously, I was actually looking at training there years ago. Kind of doing full-time training, because there's a couple places, Hong Kong, LA. Wasn't totally sure at the time to commit to it, and could I make it work, and reached out. I think that's how close I got. I think I was mentioning to you, but I didn't really dig into the system. I mean, we've talked about it quite a bit. Do you want to just kind of do a quick overview? Cause you're talking about levels. Like belt levels. Like, I mean, but.
Well, no. So in the previous lineage I was in, we had a sash system. So like a belt system. So you know, you'd have a red, green, brown, and black, and then there was obviously like
degrees.
You know, you'd get little ribbons for each of the, which meant like red one, red two, red three. In Gary's system, we don't have that. There's no formal gradings as such. So you don't. You know, it's not like here stands you in front of the class and you have to perform. And the reason being is that, because it's only a snapshot. A grading is only a snapshot. And Gary, Sifu Gary, he doesn't do that. What he'll do is he'll watch you and he'll judge you. And like I say, he moves you on when he feels you're ready to move on to the next technique. So the way it works in that sort of thing is if he feels like you're not ready, you won't get the certification. So you'll only be given the certification when he's ready, when he feels like you've got that point. And, you know, the guys over there, for instance, like in the level one, they spend, I think it's about 2 years to do the level one. You can do it quicker. You know, some guys will do it quicker, but it's about 2 years. Now, the level one, you could say is, well, at that point, you would have done... you would have done loads of empty hand drills, loads of hand drills. You would have also done the wooden dummy, Sealam Tao, Chum Cube, UG. So that encompasses the level one. So it is a very, very deep system. Most people will take longer than that. 2 years, I think, is probably the shortest amount of time that you could do it in. You can do it more condensed if you go... as an intensive student, because then you're in the backyard environment and the school. But that's the level one. Level two is, that's more, so at that level, we start looking at, Gary's got a better analogy at this. He'll sort of say, level one is sort of like learning to sort of drive the car. And then they say level two is like learning how to fix the car when it goes wrong. Mm. And then level three is like learning how to race the car. So it's, you're no longer, you don't necessarily need to be a safe driver anymore. You're a bit like it's like when you first pass your driving test, you're a little bit robotic and a little bit rigid. Sure. And that's kind of like what the level one is. You've got the drills, you understand it all, but you're still in that sort of basic stage. Level two is where we start talking about feeling and control. Mm. So we're looking for that the body's natural reflex to start sort of happening a bit more. So you're looking for more of that touch sensitivity, that reflex, the body to coordinate and cooperate with itself. And in the level two, that's where you learn the the long pole, the dragon pole is taught at that point. So that's that. And then the level three is the coach certification. So that's the coach level, so that's Sifu level, and that's more, it is very heavily based on the fighting philosophy, strategy, coaching techniques, but there's also some high level skill drills that we talk about, and there's quite a lot of skills, we talk about the little bits that sort of from his fighting experience that he passes on to you. And we also, we learn the Bar Cham Do at that stage as well. So Gary's system's quite, not unique, because there's quite a lot of lineages that do the similar sort of thing, but we learn to fight knife to knife. So we learn the forms, and then we actually learn how to fight each other with the knives and against the poles as well. When we do pole to pole, you know, I think that was something that was like, wow, this is different, because the guy's actually coming at you with a pole and he's going to hit you.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you know, it's kind of like a fight or flight. Yeah, I've got to do that. I've got to stop it. And it really does make you focus. And you have to sort of. Again, it's another thing. It's getting rid of fear. You're losing that sort of that idea. So it makes you actually a little bit more, you're a bit more dominant of the situation. You become a little bit more. I don't want to say aggressive, because I don't mean in terms like you're not raging or nothing like that. But you're very controlling and calm. So you're calm and you're controlled, but you're going to control that situation. So. Gary's very, Sifu Gary's system is very, very, importantly set out like that. If you, the problem is that some lineages, they start to do the Bar Cham Do too early, And you end up with problems because of that, because their hand techniques aren't at the right stage. They haven't developed the coordination. The hands don't cooperate with each other properly. So there's a lot of reasons why he's put it in that way. And then, of course, the level four, which is the last level, there's not many people out there with that. So I think there's only three in the world with that certification. For that level, that is more to do with the, I don't know whether you've read into it at all, but Sifu Gary has a five element system. He talks about the five elements. Okay. And that's got a deeper sort of, it's got a deeper understanding, a deeper meaning there. So there's a lot of that brought into it, more high level skills, more fighting experience. And you do a lot more chi-sao with him at that stage as well. But it's very difficult. I've tried chi-sao with him several times. You know, we touch hands while we're out there quite a lot, but you know, never with him actually really going for it, because you can't even stand there for a second. You're flying into the neighbor's bush or something.
That's amazing. I mean, I've seen it on, you know, YouTube or some of his videos he puts up. He's pushing guys against those. What are they? Are they actually mattresses? Or
yeah, they're mattresses wrapped with tarpaulin. So he's got some proper trampoline crash mats in the school. So you know, like authentic ones. I've actually got two mattresses laid in my school. I have two mattresses layered up with they're wrapped with like a banner sign, you know, with the Gary Lamb logo on.
Nice.
So I went for that sort of approach. In the UK, we can't train. I try to replicate a backyard environment, but unfortunately, you know, it'd be nice if we could train. I think like today or a few days we would have had of being able to train outside. The rest of the time is raining, so
raining,
we don't have that luxury. But LA is always sunny, and so they have that. That training, that's very good as well, because it starts to make you think about moving your opponent, actually driving them backwards. And so, you know, that's another thing that he has going for his system that's very important. So we enjoy that. It's always fun to get thrown into the mats by him and stuff like that. But oh, sure. Another thing I'll add about that, because, you know, we get a lot of comments about that sort of thing. They look at the Gary, you know, they look at Sifu Gary, and he's you know, he's a tall, big guy, you know, and he's broad shoulders. He's, you know, he's a very sort of, you know, big guy. But so what they try to do is, a lot of people, they look and they think that that's him being muscular, you know, that he's pushing guys around. And the funny thing is, you have to feel it to sort of be able to understand it. But there is no muscular power in that at all. That is all just pure energy just coming. And, you know, the thing is, if you look back, I don't know if you probably might have seen it on YouTube. I think you can find it. There's The Science of Infighting, which was done by Wang Shanlong. And it's like an old documentary sort of thing. You can find it on YouTube. It's an intro. I recommend it for anyone to watch. So, The Science of Infighting.
Okay,
A very interesting documentary, probably about 45 minutes. But you'll see Sifu Gary in that. He's this tall, very very skinny guy, and that was actually his fighting weight. So I asked him. I said, "Oh, you know, when was this?" And I think at the time he was late. Early to late 20s, you know, he's in his 20s, early 30s at most. And that was his fighting weight. So he was doing that to people back then. And it's only, you know, as you get older, like we do, we just sort of like, you know, I sort of said to him before, I said, you know, do you have to use the muscle? Are you using muscle at all? He goes, no, you know, it's all structure. It comes from the ground. So you know, and actually, if you try to use the muscle, you just gas out so quickly. That's the joy of training full time, is that, you know, if you're training with you for 10, 15 minutes, we could both use energy and be burning energy and we get away with it. But when you train for 3-4 hours, there's no energy left. All you've got left in your tank is structure. That's it. So it means that as we keep progressing, we learn to just use our structure, because there's nothing left. You can't do nothing else. Mm. So that's it. So that's important.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, wow. Lots of good experiences, I'm sure, from, and lots of learning, hey? So
yeah.
One or two more. Yeah, I know I don't want to keep going on, but what, like, date-ish, when did you first go out to LA? Like, when was that?
So I met Sifu Gary in 2016 up at, in the UK. There's a branch school up there. The first one in the UK was Sifu John Lobb. So I don't know whether you would have seen him on YouTube. He puts quite a lot of videos out there, some very good stuff. Yeah. And I at the time, I think I'd been watching some DVDs, and I just happened to Google, you know, Gary Lamb into the search engine, and John Lobb's Sifu John's post popped up saying that, you know, he was going to be there, and I think it was only 2 days' time. And so I quickly phoned up, you know, Sifu John, and I said, John, you know, have you got any tickets left? And he said, yeah, definitely. So I spoke to one or two of my Sihing, and they said, oh, we'll come up for the first day. And I said to my wife, look, it's 2 days. And she had family up in that part of the UK. So I said, oh, you know, can you ring your nan and can we stay there for the night? So off we went, and we flew up to around Liverpool area, in the north of England. So we flew up there, and I watched the seminar for 2 days, and I thought, oh, this guy's amazing. You know, he's really, really knowledgeable. Great, great stuff. But of course, it was a bit of a pipe dream, as it were, to think about going out to LA. You know, I've got two young children, a wife. I just, you know, it wasn't going to be feasible. I carried on training, and I think in 2017, I headed out to LA because I got the, it was late 2017 actually, because I got the, I think we had, if I remember rightly, I think we had a death in the family, and my wife kind of like knew I wanted to do it. And I think everyone just said to me, look, you got to go do it, you know, just do it. So I didn't need telling twice. I think by the time they had said that, I'd already booked the flight and I'd already booked him with Gary. So that was it, I was gone. And then I think last year alone, I spent 3 or 4 months out of the country. And then the year before, I spent nearly 6 months out of the country. Wow. So I tallied it up last week, and I think I've spent 9 months living with
kind of on a deep dive there. Hey, just going full in.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, like I say, when you go out to LA, it's a lovely place, but everyone always says to me, oh, have you been here? Have you been there in LA? And I'm like, no, I've been to the backyard, and I've been to a couple of restaurants. I visited Venice Beach once, and I've been up to the Hollywood side, and that's it. That's my, you know, so I spent 8 months or something, or 9 months out in LA. And I think that's the biggest amount of stuff I've seen. And
That's funny.
But because the concentration when I'm out there is training, you know.
Of course. I mean, yeah.
I'm not there for a holiday as such. I'm there just to, for me, it's work.
And, of course. Yeah.
And so I push myself as hard as I can while I'm there.
Yeah.
And because the thing is, I know otherwise I'll regret it when I come home. I'll get home and I think I should have worked a little bit harder. I should have pushed myself. That was that. But yeah, so 2017, and I opened my school in 2018, I opened my school.
Nice.
So we've only been going two years now. We've only been going, you know, but we've, you know, apart from the current situation, we've gone strength to strength.
Yeah.
And that's been amazing, you know, to see something develop from, I mean, I think we started in a little hall, and then we didn't have enough students. So we ended up going back to, luckily my family have a hotel, so I ended up using the wedding marquee, and we were trading in there for a while, and then we ended up getting a shop unit, and we rented a big unit, and it's slowly built up, and I'm now teaching in London 1 day a week as well, not currently with the situation, but I teach in London 1 day a week, which is about 2 hours from where I live. So okay. I just because I want the spread of the Gary Lamb Wing Chun, I want other people in the UK to see it. The two other schools in the UK, so you've got Sifu John Lobb and Sifu Dean in Nottingham. There's So he's up in the north, and they're both sort of like fairly, I say close. They're sort of 3-4 hours away from each other, but they're both about 6 hours away from me. So they're both by Seeing, and I wish they were a little bit closer, because actually, to be honest, it'd be nice to go and train with someone, you know, on those higher levels to help push along. It's difficult. So we don't get any time to train with each other. I was trying to go up there this year to train with Dean. Unfortunately, with this situation, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. London's only 2 hours away from where I live. I'm literally on the south coast. I mean, I live right by the water. So, for me, we're spaced out nicely enough that we don't sort of tread on each other's toes in any way, shape, or form. But so
if people are in the south, how do they connect with you? Or in London, here's a question for you. Yeah, how do people connect with you,
Lewis? So you mean how do people find me, or how do people?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, people find me through Facebook. So Gary Lam Wing Chun Bournemouth, or I've got Gary Lam Wing Chun London as page. I have the websites. My telephone number's available, WhatsApp and stuff like that. So if anyone's ever in these areas and they want to come and train, you know, we're open. You're more than welcome to come along and just train. We're quite an open lineage. We're just there to sort of. Again, it's one of the nice things, you know, about Sifu Lam is I've never, you know, we're not there bad mouthing any other lineage. We're just there to sort of like show what we do. And if someone's got something that they can show us, and, you know, we're happy to be receptive as well, to learn as well. You know, so for me, I'm on that sort of learning thing, where if you can show me something, then that's great. You know, exchange of information is always good. So. Right. That needs to happen more and more across the lineages. I think people are so happy doing this tit for tat thing and oh, my Sifu done this and my Sifu done this, and it doesn't really matter what happened. You know, the history of Wing Chun's great, but you know, we don't try to concentrate on that. We want to concentrate on what the development of Wing Chun is. How can we sort of like take this great thing and move it onwards, or you know, so. So that's good. But you know, so like I say, if any of your viewers and followers, if they ever want to meet up, then by all means, and yourself, like I say as well, if you're ever in the UK,
I will definitely come visit.
Yeah, come visit, because it'd be great. Like I say, I mean, we got a couple of guys that come over from Switzerland last year, and they come over for the guy come over for 2 months. And he just trained with us solidly for 2 months. He was there. He was just here to study English. So for him, he was happy.
Yeah.
And
that's
it was great. You know, he was from a totally different lineage. I think he had done Muay Yap, and it was great just to sort of to see the differences in what you do. And you're sort of like, okay, like, you know, I watch him do his form and his dummy, and I was like, okay, this is how we do ours, and you know, just to see and what his explanations for what, you know, why does he do it like this and why do I do it like that? And, you know, that's great, you know, to be able to exchange information like that is
totally.
And it's strange as well, because you start talking to guys like we're talking now, you know, we've not met before, and we're talking about something we have in common. So that's great as well. So, you know, it's an amazing, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah. And thanks so much for doing this. I totally appreciate it. Really? I know, you're open to Wing Chun, and I'm happy you're here chatting. One of my last questions is, what would a tip be just kind of to give to either beginner, intermediate, or advanced? You can do one or like all of them, but I mean, just, I know it's kind of a broad stroke question.
Biggest tip or advice is, I would say for most people is, you'll hear a lot of people will say, oh, a technique doesn't work, or it's a bad technique, or that's no good. You know, the thing is, what I would say to most people is it might not work at your current level or at your current understanding. So persevere with it. Try and get a deeper rate. You know, it's like, don't rubbish something before you've really fully understood it. And if you feel like you do fully understand it, then that's fine. But, you know, for me, I haven't come across a bad technique in Wing Chun. I executed techniques badly myself, and I remember turning around to Sifu and saying, I don't like this technique. I can't get it to work. And then he'd do it and he'd go, oh, it's worked for me. It's fine. You know, I can do it. You can't. And when he said that to me, I thought, you know, yeah, you're right. He can do it. He's not the one with the problem. I can't do it. So there was something I wasn't understanding about it or I wasn't just getting it or the hands and the body just don't, sometimes they just do not, you know, the mind, the hands, the body, it just doesn't cooperate with itself. So, you know, a lot of it is don't go for, well, I mean, that goes into the same tip really. Don't go for like a massive range of knowledge. Just really try to specialize in each area first. Like, you know, the skill really is in the development of being able to discipline yourself to focus to a job. You know, so if you're working Tan, you know, or you're working Quan Sao, just keep working it. Don't go off and start doing 20 different techniques. I mean, you know, we don't, in my school, the maximum I'll let them do in one night is two drills. So wow. when we're working in the school, we won't do more than two drills. That's it. There's two drills because what I want them to do is to focus on it and to get better at it. But if they only do 5-10 minutes of it and then they move straight on to something else, you know, what have they done it 20, 30 times they've done the technique? It's not enough. You really got to keep going with it. So
I love that. Love it.
You know, you've got to focus, and that's what gives people skill. So, if they can do that, then that's great.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yes. Again, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me on.
I won't hold you up anymore here, but thanks for dropping in. And I'll definitely take you up on your offer into coming to see you. When of things course, open up, obviously.
Yeah. When it all opens up again, yeah. Like I say, I mean my trip is out to LA in January, but I think I was reading today, I think the president has announced that no one's allowed to go out there till the 31st of December now. So it looks like my trip is booked on the 3rd of January. So I'm a little bit like, oh, wow, this is a little bit close for comfort. But, you know, hopefully everything opens back up and all the guys get to, you know, and the girls get back to training, because I know everyone is literally just, you know, they're clawing at the door just to get back out. Just want to get back out and do it. And I know if all your followers are like my students, I get text messages nearly every day just saying, oh, you know, have you heard anything? Is there any more going on? I said, well, you're watching the news the same time as me. You know, we just don't know when this is going to things, but I hope everyone manages to get back to training soon.
Yes, totally. Totally agree. All right. Thank you again.
No worries. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Lewis.
Thank you so much for listening to Wing Chun Talk Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to share it with someone you know who will also enjoy it. If you haven't already, make sure to follow or subscribe to catch all upcoming episodes.